Next up, Barbara Friedman. She joins us in the studio. She's going to tell us about the things trending on social media, and I can't wait. Well, not really.
I know. The last thing you really want to talk about. Yeah. But I just felt
it's still
a thing. I know yesterday was a sort of a public holiday, so I wasn't here. So I felt I still have my moment to talk about it today, belatedly. But I think for me, you know, so there's a lot of political chat online on all the platforms about Monday's national shutdown, the EFF, Julius Malema, what were the outcomes? And obviously, I think the overwhelming sentiment from analysts is it was a damn squib. It really didn't amount to much. But I think that there were some interesting things to take out of it. Partly that Malema is a master manipulator of the media, and he does get a week prior to that headline news the entire week. And then actually on Monday.
And you're still talking about
and
it.
And I'm still. And I know, but that's what I feel. I've got to keep up the trend. But. You know, I do think there were some interesting things. I mean, that video and those photos of him walking hand in hand with Carl Niehaus were...
And young Zuma.
And, yeah, exactly. And Zuma's daughter, as well as Mzwanele Manye, who's the former government spin doctor, who's now Zuma's guy. You know, it just was quite a memorable picture for me. And I know for lots of people, they're going to go, who cares? You know, who's Carl Niehaus anyway? But I suppose for anyone who's watching, it is a clear alignment of Julius Malema with the RET forces within the ANC, who are now obviously feeling like they're on the outs, on the outskirts. Anyone but Ramaphosa kind of. It reminds me a bit years ago at Polokwane when the ANC voted Mbeki out. And at that stage within the ANC, I mean, I was at that conference as a journalist. It was anyone but Mbeki. And that is what aligned the forces around Zuma. I don't think anyone then realized what that would mean. But I always get nervous when it's, you know, when you're doing that, because you're not actually voting for the positive in someone. You're just trying to get rid of someone. But actually seeing those three and Zuma's daughter trotting along in that march that took a very long time to get to where it was heading in Pretoria. I mean, it was very, very – it was attendance wasn't great. And, yeah, I mean, what did they achieve really? I suppose the one thing that they did show us was that they were quite peaceful. And everyone's terror and fear that was in the build-up to the week before was – misplaced, possibly.
It was the biggest gathering of all the gatherings around the country, about 5,000 people, according to media.
In total.
In total.
But that's not very many.
That's my point, because you had
membership.
Zuma's brigade there. You had ex-military. You have EFF.
Right. You had a few of the union.
Jimmy, Mani.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of organizations that rallied there, and they mustered only 5,000.
Well, exactly.
Why must I lose my sleep about it?
No, I agree with you.
Why must media bombard me with it? What makes it so important? What makes him so important?
And how does he get that right every time?
Absolutely. And we're creating the monster.
I know.
I mean, you are.
I know. It's all my fault. Moving on.
Let's do that. I like the story.
Yeah. Although again, you know, living in South Africa with all our issues here, these stories always kind of, you couldn't really imagine it happening in South Africa right now. So this is a village in England called Hornby. It's in North Yorkshire. And its plan at the moment is to dim its street lights so that you can get a better view of the Milky Way. And it's going to probably bring a lot of stargazers to the village. And I just find that, like, you know, it's just a lovely idea. My point here is that I think if you had to dim the lights in South Africa in a town, you might end up with a rising crime. So I don't know if that's viable here. Never mind that load shedding causes us to have dim lights in any event. But I just thought in their case, it's the north, they're sort of part of an area that is part of the North York Moors National Park. And it forms part of what they call the dark skies, the dark skies area. And it's part of the International Dark Sky Association has these areas that are part of the International Dark Sky Reserve. And I just find that so interesting. So the idea is that they are trying to to improve this for our future as well, because obviously those incredibly bright streetlights and lights on the sides of buildings. I know if you drive through our city here and you see all those lights on, it causes a whole lot of impact on the environment and on the night sky. And I love that there is an organization that's trying to preserve the night skies for us. I just think it's going to be a long time before it's put into practice here, albeit it's probably involuntary here because of load shedding.
Yeah.
So there's just, yes, it's just a lovely idea. I mean, obviously there's all sorts of light pollution issues around it. And so, yeah, this little village is going to, is on the path to doing this and, you know, try and bring down that amount of excessive and obtrusive and wasteful light pollution that they have in their village.
We
and
don't have to drive really far to get a really beautiful night
that's
sky.
That's true.
And of course, I think the best night sky ever in the whole wide world is in the Karoo.
Karoo. Yeah. And it's magnificent. And it really does. When you're in those moments where you do have the privilege of seeing that, it just changes your whole headspace. And that's for me the sad thing of living in a big city where the lights never go off. Literally.
Yeah, we're missing out.
We really are.
So look up next time you leave the city and see what's happening out there. I've been, and this is serendipitous that you would just kind of go there, because I've been marveling, because I'm a little upset that I didn't get to live the 70s. I was born in the late 60s. I was a lighty. And pictures of Woodstock I've literally been looking at over the past
week. So funny that we're discussing this today.
Yes.
I mean, this is a story that's come up a few times over the years, because it's about the iconic record cover, the vinyl record cover of Woodstock, the concert, the iconic and incredibly, you know, famous concert that took place in the UK in 1969. And we all know, well, those that have seen it, there's this picture of this couple wrapped in a blanket on the hill at Woodstock. And actually, it was only in 2019, it was 30 years after the concert, that the couple was actually identified. They'd been an anonymous couple on the record cover for so many decades. And, you know, it turned out that this couple...
I want to come look at this picture. Come look what young people were doing while she's telling us about it.
So Nick and Bobby were 20-year-old sweethearts at the time when this photographer, Burke Ouzel, snapped this picture of them on the hill. And Nick took to Facebook and announced very sadly that his wife of 54 years has now passed away. And he just wrote such a beautiful post about her on his Facebook page. It's been picked up by the media. And, you know, he talks about, over the years, he talked about how they'd only met not long before Woodstock concert. And they'd gone there in his 1965 Chevrolet Impala station wagon. They'd abandoned it a few miles from the concert site. And while they were walking, he'd seen this blanket, this pink blanket on the side of the road. And he thought, I better take it with us to have something to sit on. And that becomes the iconic blanket that they have wrapped around each other at the concert on the hill. And it's just an incredible story of love. And, you know, his wife, who's now passed away, just passed away, you know, she just always said that, you know, for her, she just wanted everyone to be inspired by that sort of love and peace that she had practiced in her life. And she actually said at the very end, she'd been in a hospice for a little while in the last months, and she'd come home and she said she just made her husband promise her three things before she died. He explains: one, no more hospitals; two, home is where she will stay; and three, when her time comes for her passing, that I would hold her close. He said, I was able to accomplish these three promises as my sweet Bobby passed from this world, while I held her close with our sons next to us.
I didn't hear you. I was watching the pics. I was looking at the pics. Wouldn't you want to go to a festival? I was only 2 years old. It's not fair.
Yeah.
But there's some visuals. You must
there's
go
There's an
find
amazing,
the
amazing documentary that they made about Woodstock with all the old footage. And it's definitely worth seeing.
Somebody says Woodstock was in the USA, not the UK.
Did I say UK? I meant US. USA, yeah. I'm sorry. That was a misspoke. I apologize.
You may want to go and look at, and I want younger people to look at that, because that's young people living out that hippie peace and love kind of movement.
And the amazing thing was that this couple, who no one knew who they were for many decades, did live out their life together for so many decades.
And that's a beautiful story.
Which is a beautiful story, because a lot of the couples there probably never saw each other again after Woodstock.
And if you Google Woodstock pics, inevitably that pic is going to jump up.
The pic.
And that's the pic that maybe triggered this interest in Woodstock again. And I've been looking literally over the past week at most of the Woodstock festival pics on the internet. And then Bob would walk in with that story. Very, very interesting.